Hello, morning and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us here today. My name is Dan Millard, and I'm a business development manager here at PCI Pharma Services, and will be the host slash moderator for today's water cooler chat. Today, we're going to be talking to you about running clinical trials in Israel and growing beyond. Here, we will discuss this in three sections. Firstly, we will focus on what Israeli companies need to consider when initiating trials in Israel, followed by the considerations that are needed when expanding those completed phase one trials in Israel to further markets such as the US or EU for phase two and phase three trials. For our final discussion point, we will look at the reverse for companies outside of Israel that are looking to conduct phase two and phase three trials in Israel. And in order to facilitate these discussions, I am joined by Gavin Morgan, the Senior Manager of Global Logistics here at PCI Pharma, Paula Strauss-Levy, PCI's in-country business development support manager, and Amir Malka, President and co-founder of IMP Services in Israel. So before we get started, I have a few housekeeping items that I'd like to mention. First, please ensure that you are muted so that we can hear all speakers and the discussions generated today. The second, because this is an informal chat, we welcome and encourage all your questions. If you have any questions, please enter them into the chat function located on your toolbar. If not, and you're not able to access the chat, please send your questions directly to me via text message, iMessage, or WhatsApp on +44 7824 142 823. I will also copy that number into the chat functionality as well, so you're able to text me again if you didn't get a chance to take it down from there. So with that, as I appreciate time is quite limited today for our discussion, Paula, moving into our first topic to discuss today, what should Israeli companies looking to conduct phase one trials in Israel need to consider and be aware of?
Okay. Well, thank you, Dan, for moderating the call, and thank you for the question. So generally speaking, I think it's not only Israeli companies, but I think all companies essentially who are wanting to do a clinical trial in Israel, they should be aware of several things, and essentially these are mainly advantages. I'm not sure Israel is really known in its clinical trial capabilities to worldwide companies, aside of really giant pharma companies who have already in-country representatives and in-country companies that perform clinical trials for them. But for other companies, I think still Israel is a mystery in terms of conducting clinical trials. So I think it's important to note that Israel, as a country, from a regulatory aspect, is considered an approved country to perform clinical trials, both by the FDA as well as EMA and other competent European authorities, as well as other worldwide countries. So from regulatory standpoint, if you do clinical trials in Israel, this trial will be recognized by a valid trial in other competent authorities or FDA by leading authorities, as mentioned. Also, I think it's important to note that Israel has an abundance of medical centers, but these centers are not regular centers, but these are highly qualified professional medical centers, specialty centers that can perform various topics, clinical trials. On top of that, it's important to note that all Israeli investigators, aside of the fact that they speak fluent English, they are required to undergo routine GCP training and clinical trial training that makes them more compatible to perform clinical trials. One of the biggest advantages in Israel is the fact that Israeli HMOs, the local clinics, have the second largest database in the world. So that means, and because of the fact that all Israeli citizens have full medical coverage, that means that every company who is doing a clinical trial here will have the benefit of seeing a full medical history coverage of every particular and individual patient. Additionally, another very big advantage is the small geographic area. So because it's so small, it has a concentration of all these small medical centers. And because of that, enrollment is fairly easy and quick. You can get more people in less time, and it's easier for them to travel and come for various centers across the country. Another advantage is the fact that we have a lot of ethnic groups. This is the color of Israel. We have a lot of ethnicity types. And when a company is doing a clinical trial, one thing that it has to consider is the ethnicity issue. And the fact that you're able to include in your enrollment different ethnic groups, that's an advantage for itself. Another very important benefit, that would be better control. And that means, again, due to its small size, you can travel more quickly. You can do monitoring and site audit much, much easier and faster. Thereby, you can have the benefit of reduced costs, and as well as more, as mentioned, better control of your clinical trial. So I think these are essentially the main benefits. One thing to consider, and I'm not sure our people worldwide know this, but in terms of the scientific strength of Israel, Israel is fifth worldwide in the number of papers, scientific papers per capita. That means we are a significant hub in terms of scientific strength. Our prestigious and academic centers are able to accommodate clinical trials fairly easy. We have two main phase one units that can accommodate easily volunteer or patient-based phase one trials. But not only that, every specialty center, every medical center can accommodate volunteer patient study. So this is essentially it in terms of what is the most typical or the advantages of doing trials in Israel or doing phase one in Israel and what you need to consider. And I think I'll forward the call now to maybe Amir to speak about more of the regulatory and logistic side of things.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Paula. Thank you, Dan, and the PCI team for inviting me to this water cooler. It's a great opportunity to share with you, the audience, how clinical trials in Israel are conducted from the logistics perspective. So I'm Amir Malka, co-founder and president of IMP, Clinical Supply Services, an Israeli local clinical depot, and it's an honor to be the preferred partner of PCI in Israel. So what do we need to consider when conducting a phase one clinical trial in Israel? I will try to highlight some important points to let you know. So first, I think that you need to choose and qualify the right logistic partner on a manufacturer supply chain as early as possible, especially because quality and legal aspect, or to work with your global partner, PCI. a local depot in Israel for all study phases should hold a GMP certificate, GDP certificate, manufacturers, importers authorization, and a wholesaler license. Regarding GMP and GDP regulations, so Israel is actually almost identical to Europe. There are a few gaps in early phases, but the main requirements are the same in terms of supply chain. The major difference between phases one and two to phases three and four in Israel is the need to perform recertification by Israeli QP and the lack of inspection regarding GMP, GDP in the early phases. And there is an additional gap, which is the need to sign a technical quality agreement, not only with the local depot, but with the medical center that participated in the study. So just to summarize, and as Paula mentioned, Israel is a good place to recruit patients for your next clinical study. But of course, you need to choose the right partners and plan your moves in advance. I hope it's open the window for this opportunity.
That's great, Amir and Paula. Thank you for sort of that initial introduction, to the phase one trials and what needs to be considered when looking to start trials and consider Israel. With that and possibly the next steps, generally when phase ones have been completed in country for Israeli biotech companies or sponsor companies, what then I guess would need to be considered when moving more globally, maybe to the EU or to the US, with regards to expanding, if you are an Israeli company, going to a different region such as the EU and US. And Gavin, I'm not sure whether you can advise a little bit on that, sort of what you need to look for with regards to CMO capabilities, and then possibly the discussion that's interlinked with that and the regulatory requirements. Paula, could you both sort of discuss a little bit on that, or on what's needed?
Yeah, so no, thanks, Dan. So I think from my side, if you like, I'm sure Paula and certainly Amir will be a lot more qualified than me regarding the actual export out of Israel. But purely from our experience, where we see sponsors originating in Israel and then selecting a CMO for rest of the world distribution, you know, whether that CMO is US based or based in the EU or here in the UK. And I think it's just ensuring that, you know, every country, you know, Amir touched on it regarding the Israeli requirements, but every country has different in-country regulations regarding the import of IMP, even in and additional requirements such as import duties and taxes and so on and so forth. So when a CMO is being selected, again, if we use North America as an example, it's just having that awareness of what the US requirements are. You know, I know today's session is primarily focused on Israeli studies, but just touching quickly on, you know, on the US, where an approved IND needs to be in place, you know, in the UK and Europe, you know, obviously it needs that QP release. But some countries, you know, for the UK, we can import material just under a generic MIA IMP license, which is issued by the MHRA. In Germany, for example, we have an additional license that is batch specific. None of these things are showstoppers. You know, there's not import licenses as such with the US and Europe, but it's just ensuring that your CMO is able to support, you know, who's going to be the IOR, who's going to, if an import license is required, you know, if material is going to another non-EU region, you know, if we're utilizing an in-country depot in Russia or Ukraine, we're moving material from Israel into Russia and Ukraine, for example, you know, who's going to apply for the import licenses? And it's ensuring that the sponsor company or the exporter from Israel has ticked all those boxes, I guess, and that the CMO is able to support. And if they're not, the in-country CRO will support, and so on and so forth. I don't know, Amir, from your perspective at IMP, if you were shipping material from your facility in Israel to another CMO outside of the country, other than that country's import requirements, are there any specific, you know, requirements or things that you need to consider from an Israeli export perspective?
Yeah, so I think that, thank you for that, Gavin. So the Israeli Ministry of Health issues regarding the CMO aspect that so the Israeli Ministry of Health issues a GMP certificate for manufacturers of IMPs to use in phase 3 and 4 studies only. So you need to keep in mind that when moving to the next phase, to a global level, to ensure the existence of a GMP certificate by your own by your Israeli CMO. This is a issue. And there's another important part of recognized and non-recognized countries, because the Ministry of Health in Israel has defined two major countries groups. So the recognized countries like EU, of course, USA, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, UK, Norway, Iceland, and Switzerland, that require only recertification in Israel. And if you are producing the drug in non-recognized countries, it's very challenging and require qualification of all the supply chain from the manufacturer until the depot. So we need to be aware of that when you choose where you're going to conduct the next step. So
I think just to add to that, Paula, if possible, would you be able to comment slightly on the regulatory considerations that need to be required from looking outside of Israel when expanding to phase 2 and phase 3?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Dan. So I think the most important thing when you're looking to expand your trial is, first of all, to have a regulatory understanding. And that means that you should be in continuous contact with the regulatory authority in the territory which your drug to be licensed. Because doing a trial is not only for the purpose of showing the safety and efficacy of that drug, but it's also about compliance. And the compliance relates to compliance with the local standards and requirements of the territory in which you wish to register your drug. So before you start to expand your trials, you need to assure that you have a meeting with the regulatory authority. Let's say it's the FDA, for example, or the EMA for that matter. Make sure that you have a meeting with them. Make sure that you convey your trial purposes, the results of your phase one. Make sure that your target indication is clearly defined. Make sure that you have all the questions lined up to the regulatory authority to assure that the trial that you're going to conduct, whether that's phase two and definitely phase three, is a trial that is accurate, that it's regulatory compliant, and essentially that it is efficient. I see a lot of companies that rush in expanding trials into Europe or even in Israel, that it really doesn't matter where you're doing the additional trials, but they do it based on reading maybe the guidelines, talking with consultants, but that is not enough. Speak directly with the regulatory authority, explore what they want, make sure you're doing exactly what they want. This will save you time and money. And I see many, many companies doing this mistake over and over again. And again, because of that, they have to repeat the trials or just neglect the invention, and that's really too bad. The second thing I think is really important, and maybe even this is another take-home message, and that is learn the processes. No one in the company understands everything. We all need to understand something in every matter that we handle. And for that, for example, let's talk about the supply chain and logistics issues. You have a clinical trial in each and every company. You have a VP for clinicals. They don't understand every process in detail. You have to speak with professionals, you have to speak with consultants, but you have to understand what every step means to your company. For that matter, for example, PCI has developed a detailed list that says, what do you need to know when you're taking upon a supply chain and logistic vendor? Do the same when you're hiring a CRO. Make sure you understand each and every process that they do. Make sure you understand the flow of your trial, and that will ease the process, and also will reduce your costs, because essentially when you're hitting the middle of the way and someone is telling you, hey, you need this and that import license, or you need to submit that in the local IRB as well as the international IRB. There are many, many action items that you would save if you were to know and understand the process earlier on rather than later. So it is a general comment, but I think it's very, very important, because I see, again, many companies fail to perform this. And know your material, learn it, and you'll be much more successful.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Thank you both. Just before we proceed on to the final topic to discuss today, we have had a question come in, and I think this came in at the back end of the first point when Paula and Amir, you were speaking, and I omitted to raise it as we move quite nicely into the next topic. But Kai asked, what's the prevalence of SLE in the Israel population? Now, I'm not sure if that's referring to the point that you made with regards to the ethnicity, Paula, in Israel, and sort of what is the prevalence of SLE in the Israel population has been asked, and if that's a question that you're able to answer.
Well, I don't have the data on the top of my mind, but I'm sure it's quite it's easily available on the web. And if not, the person who's asking the question is, I'm inviting him to contact me directly, and I'll be able to help him to find this information quite easily.
Yeah, that's correct. Thank you very much for that. And the next comment we've had, it's not so much a question that's come from Sharon Rodriguez, and I think it kind of takes us into the next topic that we were going to discuss today with regards to companies outside of Israel looking to identify Israel as a site to expand their phase two, phase three trials. Sharon's comment is also completed Annex 7 form is needed and must be in place before distribution of IMP commences from local Israeli depot, in my experience, and this must be renewed yearly. So I'm not sure whether on that point we want to just sort of touch on it, and Amir, maybe you may be the best person, followed by Gavin and Paula as well, to just discuss those considerations that companies need to consider when coming into Israel from outside, possibly the EU or the US, for instance.
I can take it, and I think it's a good point, because I will try to emphasize the most important points when considering adding clinical sites in Israel. And there are two silos that you need to manage in parallel: importation of the IMPs and the ancillary supply chain. So the common practice of importation of investigational products to Israel can be performed after study approval, and then we can gain import license. And that the documentation requirement, as Sharon said, is Appendix 7. So Appendix 7 is the medical center management approval for the study. So this is the kickoff to start and activate the study. You need the study protocol, we need the pro forma invoice, and this process will take around 2 to 3 business days to receive after applying. And of course, let's not forget the QPR certification supporting documents. And you know, we need to have the COA certification, GMP certification, pedigree statement, randomization, label proof, and so on. And in parallel, we need to support the supply chain of ancillaries. And this is more challenging, because ancillaries such as lab kits, medical equipment, e-diaries, laptop, freezers, can require 3 different licenses from 3 different government ministries: Ministry of Health, Ministry of Communication, and Ministry of Economics, depending on the ancillary or device type. Gaining the import license take longer than the dark product import license. It can take 3 weeks on average. So we need to be ready in advance. And after qualification of ancillaries and defining the requirement import license, the importer, and we act as an importer, of course, needs to submit the application to the relevant agencies. The application needs to have the relevant documentation, such as, but not limited to, technical brochure, a specification, airway bill, invoice, CE certification, CB report, EMC report. I assume you are familiar with those kind of documents. And only after gaining the import license, the preparation of sending the ancillaries to Israel can begin. And I think it's highly recommended to get the local depot approval that all licenses are in place before sending the ancillaries to Israel. So I hope I have managed to shed some light on the Israeli ecosystem in terms of clinical supplies, and of course, convince you to bring clinical studies to Israel.
No, thanks, Amir. I think just following on from your points here, Amir, from an Israeli perspective, from a non-Israeli CMO that's shipping material into Israel, I guess that would be my only advice to our customers or our sponsors that we're working with. It's all around awareness. You know, sponsors are always very keen to get sites activated, to get patients enrolled, and so on and so forth. So like Amir was just saying, ensuring that you have that in-country local depot set up, because many years ago, you know, when there wasn't necessarily a requirement for that recertification in Israeli within Israel, sorry, we always had those two options. You know, would we go via a pass-through? Could you go direct to site? Would you use an in-country depot? You know, that recertification, or you know, the Israeli equivalent of a QP release, changed everything. Where we have to work, and I say have to, it's a pleasure to work with, but we work with the likes of Amir at IMP, where customers will have product at a PCI site or at another CMO. It'll be QP released in that country. Israel is ready to go. They want to get material into that country, so it's there for when that first site get activated. But to Sharon's point, where we talk about Form 7s and things like that, there can be that stumbling block that an import license, you know, we need documents to apply for that import license. Like, it's a very straightforward process. That IL can be obtained relatively straightforwardly as long as you have the required documents in place. And then it's the same with obviously the Form 7, you know, until that agreement with that medical center is in place, even if import license is in place, if material has been shipped over to Israel, it's been recertified because the pedigree documents and the C of A's and regulatory approvals and everything else is in place. A valid Form 7 needs to be in place before site distribution can commence to that particular medical center. And that is something that is slightly different within Israel compared to other countries, you know, where in the UK we receive material before regulatory approval is in place. It's sat in our hub. And then when the regulatory approval is granted by the MHRA or BfArM or whoever it may be, the QP performs the release. Whereas in Israel, there, you know, we do see those two requirements, the initial import license to get material into the country, that recertification, and then the onward distribution to the investigator site. So it is a very straightforward process. I guess it's just ensuring that sponsors are aware of these steps, so they know that, you know, they do have these limits, that it's not going to be that regulatory approval is granted today, we're going to be start making site shipments tomorrow. Regulatory approval is granted and the wheels in motion start, I guess. So I think that would be my only advice from a CMO's perspective looking into Israel with the timelines associated to the steps that Amir has touched on.
That's great. Thank you both, Gavin and Amir. And I do obviously appreciate as well that we're coming very close to the half hour mark and when we're due to close this water cooler chat out today. But we've just received one final question, and I'll ask this before I look to hand over to Amanda, our marketing coordinator, to advise of further water cooler chats. But this, I guess, question is directed to you, Amir, maybe more than anybody else on the call today. But what is the time course and cost for IMP recertification in Israel?
Okay, so usually we're doing that in parallel. So if we will do it in parallel when the shipment is ready to ship to Israel and we get all the information in advance. So usually it can take less than 2 business days from the moment that the shipment arrived to our depot, and from there we can release it to the site. Of course, we need more information, not just what I mentioned before, the COA, batch certificate, GMP certificate, and so on. We need also the shipment temperature data and colored picture and something like that. So it can take less than 2 days in order to be from the moment that it's arrived to our depot until it will get to the final destination. And around cost, it will be much, much more cheaper than a QP release in Europe. It's only recertification, so around $150 or something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's not
so expensive. So just because it's recertification, yeah. We are not business from scratch. We rely on the QP, on the European QP.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Amir. And I think, you know, I think any questions like that require further detail, you know, we're more than happy to go into that after today's water cooler chat. And, you know, I think our contact details will be presented at the end of this water cooler chat, and we can discuss and host any questions further on through separate TC, Kai or anybody else that has any questions related to inquiries off today's water cooler chat. But on that note, as I mentioned, we're coming very close to the close of play for today's water cooler chat. I'd like to thank all our speakers, Paula, Gavin and Amir, for your contributions today. I think it's been very informative. We've gone through quite a lot, but I'm sure there's a lot more that we could have gone through had we had more than 30 minutes. And before we close up today, I'll just hand over to Amanda, our marketing coordinator, to run through some future water cooler chats that we have to present to you. Amanda, I'm not sure if you're on mute.
Yeah.
Yep, totally was. Sorry, I was talking to myself over here. Thank you very much, Dan, and thank you to the team, Gavin, Paula, and Amir, for sharing your insights and considerations on running clinical trials within Israel. So as Dan mentioned, my name is Amanda, and I am the marketing coordinator here at PCI. I know that we're almost out of time today, but I just wanted to take a moment to thank you all for your continued support of the water cooler series that we've been doing. It has been a great success, and we are excited by your great feedback and comments. We wanted to advise that we will be taking a short break over the holiday period and into January while we work on pulling together a new and exciting schedule for 2021. Please send any topics you would like to see on the agenda moving forward via the feedback survey, which I'll be sending out after today's chat and typically after every chat. And we'll do our best to definitely get these on the agenda for the new year. but do not fear. However, we do still have three extremely educational events scheduled here to this short break. So if you can turn your attention to the screen, in 2 weeks, you'll see that we have the first of our Australia Gateway to Asia Pacific Trials chats, which is on November the 10th, and we'll have a second one on November the 12th. So please note that these two chats will be the exact same. We're just making it available at different times to accommodate our Asia Pacific audience. So on November 10th, you'll see that the start time will be 8 a.m. British time and 4 p.m. Japan Standard Time. And on November the 12th, we'll be starting at 1 p.m. Pacific time and 4 p.m. Eastern time. And then finally, on December 10th, join us and our experts, Tim Roberts, Brian Kesey, and Tris Evans, to chat about what has happened this year in clinical supplies and how to effectively plan your clinical supplies moving forward into 2021. If you've not had a chance to register for any of these upcoming chats yet and are interested in some of these topics, please feel free to visit our website at www.pciservices.com/water to complete your registration. Further to this, just finally, if you've missed any of our past chats and are interested in listening to the recording, we do have all our recordings available on our website at www.pciservices.com/water-cooler-list. You'll see on the screen here that our latest three chats are now up and available. And you'll also find a couple of white papers on there as well that have come from our water cooler chats. So thank you very much for joining us today. We definitely look forward to seeing you at a few upcoming water cooler chats and hope you find our resources page useful as well. We wish you a great rest of your day. Thank you very much and have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.